Welcome to the Jack Straw Writers Program, a series of live readings and conversations with Pacific Northwest writers, recorded during the spring of 2005 at Jack Straw Productions in Seattle. This year's series was curated and hosted by John Mifsud. In this program, we will hear from poet Freda Jaffe and novelist Anna Bylent. Here's your host, John Mifsud.
Our next writer is Anna Bylent. Anna's the author of Horse Thief, a collection of short fiction that was published by Curbstone Press in 2004. Her stories and poems have appeared in numerous journals, including Calyx, Briarcliff Review, Clackamas Literary Review, Raven Chronicles, Caprice, and Stringtown. Please help me welcome Anna Bylent.
I wanted to thank Jack Straw for everything that they do and for being here, and John for picking not only me, but all of us, because it's been really wonderful to be part of this particular group of writers. I sort of took the liberty, because Jack Straw is geared to sound and everything that I write begins with character and begins with voice, you know, this sort of gives me an opportunity to approach something a little bit differently. So what I've done is explored a story through monologue. And this story, entitled The Lady Who Wore Trousers, is part of a collection of short fiction by that same title, at least for the moment. And all these stories have their origins in war, but not the stories that we're used to hearing, but more the ones that sort of come between the cracks, the stories that are sort of at the periphery and trickle down and affect people who are far from the center of war, perhaps. So they're all civilian stories of one way or another. But this particular story kind of has its roots in where I began, which was London. And I was born into post-World War II London. And as a little girl, I used to call London the town with all the houses fallen down. It's a terrible thing to put your kids on a train and send them off to who knows where. Tags round their necks like a couple of parcels. You have to keep telling yourself it's for the best. You have to put your faith in the government at a time like this. Oh, you try to put on a cheery face, but inside it's another matter. I felt like the world was coming to an end. All of it's so sudden. One day it's just rehearsals, then it's the real thing. What you do at school today then, love? I asked Maggie when she came in the door one day. Practice for the evacuation, she said, so we won't have to be blown to bits by Mr. Hitler's bombs. Is that what they're telling you then? That was back in April, and every week after, they had a drill. Then it's July, and school's over with, and it's the summer holidays. No one's thinking about war. You think about taking the kids for a nice day at the seaside. A lovely summer we had too, sunshine every day. Then it's the end of August, and they want all the kids back at school. The summer holidays aren't even completely over yet, but they want them back anyway. Another practice, they say. Except this time they send them home with a list. Things to pack, if or when necessary. One toothbrush, one comb or hairbrush, one pair of plimsolls, one worn cardigan or mac, two pair of clean knickers and two pair of clean stockings or socks. I don't know who made that up. The teachers or the government. It's not much, is it? And what do they have to put the word clean in there for? What do they think? You're going to pack dirty knickers? Then out of the blue, it's the real thing. A Friday of all days. Why not a Monday? Why not the beginning of the week? So there I was, dragging them out of bed at the crack of dawn on a Friday. Come on, Maggie, love. Look sharp. It's not the end of the world. Stuffing all their bits and pieces in a bag, telling them to go have a proper sit on the toilet because there's no toilets on the train. Stan was no bloody help at all. What's England ever done for the working man? Tell me that, Bridget. He's shaving, like it was any other day, getting ready to drive his bleeding bus. This isn't our war, Bridget. That's what you don't get. Stanley Stevens ain't about to run like a scared rabbit. No one's asking you to run anywhere, Stan. This is about the children. You won't find Princesses Elizabeth and Margaret hanging about in London, waiting on Mr. Hitler to drop one of his bombs on Buckingham Palace. You mark my words, their royal highnesses are already tucked away nice and safe in the country someplace, and what's good enough for a princess is good enough for our two. All this before the sun's even up. Stanley's problem is he never got over the last war. The Great War, they called that one. Nasty coughing fits he gets from all the gas he breathed. Terrible it was. Well, he still has nightmares, doesn't he? He's still trying to forget. That's why he's down the pub all the time. I'm just thankful the government's doing something right for a change. At least they're thinking about the children. Except, what about the little ones? That's what worries me. Like our Kenny. All the little ones get to tag along with their big brothers and sisters. That's the plan. They haven't practiced, though. They haven't had a proper practice. Mind you, Kenny knows about his gas mask. I made sure of that. I'd let him play in it sometimes so he'd get used to it. I'd wear mine and he'd wear his, and off we go to the park to feed the ducks, like it was a game. He knows how to put it on all by himself. But it's a bit much for him to carry. Seems like I barely got them out of bed and it was time to leave. Come on, darlings. Say goodbye to Daddy. Oh, come on, Stan. This is no time to go soft. They're going to be late. You got everything, Maggie, love. You sure? Here, let me hold that. Right then. You should have seen it. We met up on the school playground, the whole school, teachers blowing whistles like mad, all the children with their names on a tag and lined up in a crocodile, the little ones too. Everything very efficient, I must say. The teachers marched them along the pavement right smart, us mums made to tag along in the road. I had a time keeping up. My Maggie kept twisting her head round to make sure I was coming. She's a right warrior, she is. I'm still here, darling, I called out. You just keep track of Kenny, all right? Poor little blighter. He didn't have a clue. He was still half asleep. By the time we got to King's Cross, there were crocodiles of children coming from all directions, like the Pied Piper was on the loose. Follow me, children, and don't forget your gas mask. You've never seen so many children in your life. Hundreds of children, all clutching bags and hurrying along with their gas mask boxes, clunking against their legs, all of them tagged. The worst part was not being able to say a proper goodbye. Well, there was no parents allowed on the platforms, was there? We had to stay back behind the railing. You're a big girl now, Maggie, darling. So it's up to you to take care of Kenny, all right? All right. And I'll give her a quick kiss and tell her to get on with it. She's only 10, bless her heart. Bye-bye, Kenny, darling. Bye-bye. Waving like crazy, blowing kisses. Him looking back with eyes big as saucers. Then they're whisked off. You'll be home again by Christmas, I yelled after them. Who knows if they heard? Who knows when they'll be home? The words just popped out. Something to cheer them up. To cheer me up. But they were already gone. Swallowed up in all that pandemonium on the platform. So many children, you couldn't even tell who's who and what's what. You're just stuck behind the railing, waving and trying not to cry. And feeling like someone chopped your insides with an axe.
Anna Barland, reading as part of the Jack Straw Writers Program. Our program continues with Freda Jaffe. Once again, John Mifsud.
Our last reader this evening is Freda Jaffe. She currently works as a family therapist, counseling individuals, couples, and families in Seattle and Linwood. She also volunteers with Powerful Schools as a writing consultant at Beacon Hill Elementary School. Her poetry was featured in a chapbook entitled The Janine Poems. This spring, another piece she will read this evening entitled Your Next Poem will be published by the Friends of William Stafford. Freda tells me each time she catches a glimpse of Mount Rainier, she has to remind herself to breathe. Please help me welcome Freda Jaffe.
Thank you, John. Thank you to the people at Jack Straw for their support. And thank you to all of you for being here. There's a little box in the New York Times every day that lists the names of the dead. And I wrote this in honor of that. The names of the dead crawl out of the lined box in which they have been resting, one on top of the other, gather all the words on the page and the white space in between. Step over the photo of a car bomb exploding at an ice cream shop and remains of victims buried in a makeshift grave. They march out the door, cross the street to the Best Western, where they proceed to book a room and organize themselves into proper and common nouns, meeting in corners and under banquet tables, shaking fingers to emphasize salient points. They know their time is up. Almost, so they spill out of the room, trailing a white tablecloth upon which is written, "See what happens when the old men send the young ones off to war." So I wanted to write a little bit about war because I have been working with a number of people in my practice who are either coming back from Iraq, spouses of people coming back from Iraq, and in one case, someone who's a survivor, a child survivor of one of the concentration camps in World War II in Poland. And as a therapist, there's a big deal in the state of Washington about, and most states, about confidentiality. I can't just come and tell the stories that I'm hearing. So I wondered how I could begin to write about war. I mean, war is such a big thing. And one day at the Linwood Public Library, a book about Guernica literally tumbled off the shelf into my hands. And I have a little visual here, even though this is being recorded. For anyone who hasn't seen it, I had the opportunity as a child to spend time with it at the Museum of Modern Art because it left Europe. It was painted in 1937. But it left Europe during Hitler's time and then couldn't go back because of Franco being the dictator in Spain. And so I just started writing. I got very inspired when I learned more. I never really knew the story much about Guernica. And so I wrote a few pieces about that. Picasso's song, After Pinsky. When I had no hands, I pushed a broom to paint. When I had no love, I made the sea suffice. When the mountain froze, I climbed above the clouds. When clouds refused, I carved a tribal mask. When I had no mask, I wore a cloak of mud. When I had no clay, I turned to simple words. When language failed, I prayed for help from owls. When I heard no songs, I taught my ears to hum. When critics clucked, I broke more rules in paint. When paint was dry, I etched my dreams in blood. I have no blood, I set the shapes in steel. I have no sweat, I build a house of straw. I have no breath, the wind will be my breath. It carries me past borders, guns, and swords. Françoise Gillot muses. This is a villanelle, by the way. I wondered if it tired him to stand so long in one spot. No, he said, that's how painters craft a haunting song. Not to mention why we never quite belong to any time. While I work, I leave my body and my dread outside the door. It never tires me to stand along the river's edge and pray to be transformed. As Muslims leave their shoes and bow their heads, painters learn to sing an ancient song. I have no way to sort through right or wrong for those who ask. Every generation owns its dead. It never tires me for very long. My will to sift through history is strong. From Rubens, Goya, to the Catalan, I shed my wrinkled skin, then whistle a few bars of siren song. Painters, sometimes known for being strong, obsess on form with color, brush, and bread. To stand in front of canvas is to long and watch as language wraps itself in song. One of the creatures, one of the images that Picasso was fascinated and obsessed by was the Minotaur, which is over there on the left. And I did a little research and found out something about the Minotaur. And then using Shakespeare's, one of my favorite Shakespearean sonnet 116, as my template, I wrote, "What any Minotaur learns. Call it coupling, though uneasy, if you must. My mother hid beneath a suit of cow to graze and chew. In that throaty luring, quite unjust, coaxed glances on her soft, wet secret to allow him some relief. From the thrust of that one moment was my future sealed, half man, half beast, drunk in my lust for blood, which may be an impediment. Not one to turn down invitations to a sumptuous feast, nor wise enough to curb my yawning appetite, but not so dumb to keep me from a loathing of my fate. I serve as proof of archetype for every generation, without benefit of clothing. I pray it is an error somehow proved, that I may still dine on honor and be loved." There was an exhibit recently at the Seattle Center, sponsored by the American Friends Service Committee, and there were 1,546 boots, pairs of boots, representing the 1,546 military, U.S. military personnel killed in Iraq. And it was quite an awesome experience to see these boots arranged in order alphabetically by state and by name. These boots represent the 1,546. The boots of the dead resemble the boots of the living, scuffed by wear, laces frayed by the roar of wind and mortar, a far-off sound. Some stand at attention, stiff with fear. Even if they don't admit it, they don't admit it. No one admits it. Unlike Madronas in the park, whose ribbons peel from bark bending with the weight of rain and wind, shaped slow by turning of night into day, into night. Bowing, a ritual lost in this country. Bowing the head. Bowing the knee. Bowing the body. Raise white flag in surrender. Boots stand in pairs to count the dead, scuffed by war, laces frayed by the roar of wind and sand. War sick. I borrowed the first line or part of the first line from Pablo Neruda and Tim Siebels. It just so happens I am sick of war, the winning and the losing, us against them, the terrible secret, calculation of probabilities, a swift snake that counters with its tail when struck on the head, counters with its head when struck on the tail, coils into rope to choke an opponent. Toss a coin, it's heads. Toss a coin, it's heads. Toss a coin, tails. Our bodies growing numb, the terrible truth that seeps through cracks like rain, the twisting of a fact into its opposite, the way poison permeates the cavity within the lungs, sirens and church bells and counterpoint until what is left is screaming, the way darkness can drop anywhere on earth. And I'll end with this poem, a little bit different content. inspired by the writing of William Stafford. I read an interview with his family. His son, Kim Stafford, is also a poet. And he said that his father once said, "I would trade everything I have written to write the next poem." Your next poem waits for a thumbprint of land. Slide through mud to a swollen creek ripped wide with sound. Clumps of leaves and ferns have found their season. Even a bottle cap tossed here, rare as a forgotten coin, borrows light. These are your teachings, outline of trees propped against the edge, tilting earth. How rooftops defer to rain, while clouds leave a rim for sun before it sets. Some mention a new career, invite you to begin without an interview. The only requirement is to notice the way smoke drifts out of chimneys, to listen for a voice you begin to recognize as your own. Thank you.
Freda Jaffe reading as part of the Jack Straw Writers Program. These readings and interviews were recorded at Jack Straw Productions during the spring of 2005 as part of the Jack Straw Writers Program and co-produced for radio with 94.9 KUOW Seattle. The curator of this year's program was John Mifsud. Audio engineer and producer for radio was Scott Bartlett. The program's manager was Steve Peters. The executive director of Jack Straw Productions is Joan Rabinowitz. The Jack Straw Writers Program is made possible with support from the Paul G. Allen Family Foundation for the Arts, the Brenham and Jake Foundation, Arts Fund, the Mayor's Office of Arts and Cultural Affairs, the For Culture King County Lodging Tax Fund, the Washington State Arts Commission, the National Endowment for the Arts, Humanities Washington, and individual contributors. Support for radio production provided by Clark Neuber, Certified Public Accountants and Consultants. Original music provided by Jack Straw Artist-in-Residence, Ela Lamlin. All of the writers heard in this series are published in Volume 9 of the Jack Straw Writers Anthology and featured online in the Jack Straw Writers Forum at jackstraw.org. To purchase a copy of the anthology or for more information about Jack Straw Productions or the Jack Straw Writers Program, please contact us by phone at 206-634-0919. Or visit us at www.jackstraw.org. Thanks for listening.